copy and print. Kissing
me goodbye. Idina Menzel, Tony Award-winning Broadway powerhouse and star of Wicked, Rent, and Glee, is at the Adrian Arts Center on November 30th in an all-new concert. You can join audiences around the world who are falling in love with Idina Menzel as she performs her favorite songs and brand-new hits. More information at artscenter.org or the box office at 305-949-6722. Idina Menzel, November 30th, live in concert.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, along with Bonnie Berman. Welcome back, Bonnie.
Thank you very much.
It's our Wednesday edition. And joining us now is regular contributor Dan Ricker. He's followed South Florida government and politics since 2000 with his independent watchdog report. Of course, he's a frequent guest on Topical Currents. Hello, Dan.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll also be taking your calls. Welcome to Dan Ricker, Bonnie.
And hello, Dan.
Always a pleasure, Bonnie.
Women are now a majority on the Miami-Dade Commission. Has it happened before? And what could be the effects?
It happened, actually, in 2002 when Barbara Carey Schuler became the first female chair of the Miami-Dade County Commission. And Katie Sorensen was her wingman as vice chair. And that was actually was Schuler that created the idea of having committees, which I, at the time I used to joke with her, was like a work program for me, because this is where the public was supposed to speak, not at the main 13-member board meetings. And it turned out to be that, you know, public participation is at these committees is unless it's very controversial, is almost non-existent. It's just staff.
And so now who's at the helm?
Now we have Rebecca Sosa, who represents West Miami and that general area to the west, and Linda Bell, who is the first woman mayor of the city of Homestead a couple years ago, and she won her seat on the commission in 2010, and she's number two.
All right. And will the Pet Trust straw ballot win translate into the commission passing an ordinance? We discussed the Pet Trust on Monday and an update on it.
Yeah, I mean, what the trust is doing is saying, you know, should the county leaders use public money to expand, and, you know, and how that money comes in, if it's through whatever mechanism, to expand services so that we have essentially a no-kill shelter. Pepe Diaz, who's a commissioner and a big supporter, gave me the plans for, you know, this in the future, the timeline of this kind of activity. So I think it's definitely gained. Sally Heyman was a big supporter.
Right.
The bulk of the commission were big supporters. Though Barbara Jordan, who was a commissioner, suggested why not have the same kind of idea for, you know, money does for Jackson, for example. So it's not just the Pet Trust, but you have the Human Trust.
Right.
So the straw ballot on the Pet Trust shows the commission that the voters are in favor, so they can proceed without any kind of
political cover. Discrimination.
Well, wasn't Pepe Diaz first against it, and then they brought in a dog or something to the meeting?
That he adopted and fell in love with, I guess.
Dan, talk a little bit about the result of the national voting fiasco in Florida. Do you think early voting will be extended in the state, and maybe a dwindling of the voter ID and restrictions on voters?
I think it has to be almost a two-prong approach. I mean, there's nothing like a general election. For president, national offices. So that comes every 2 years. One is either for the governor, or the next cycle is for the president. So you might want to have longer early voting, especially on the presidential one.
Right.
When we had the governor race in 2010, there was early voting, but it was really not that busy. But, it's unacceptable on a presidential election to have the kind of logistics issues that we had on this past one. And frankly, thank God for two things. One, the weather was nice. I mean, I went to the very first early voting poll sites, and people were in line, you know, at about five or six places I visited that first Saturday, and I couldn't believe the length of lines, and I thought to myself, thank God it's not raining or lightning, You know, I mean, over the years, there has been a voter hit by lightning somewhere in the state.
And as it played out, though, you were really better off probably voting on election day rather than early voting.
Well, it depends on where you were.
All the precincts were open.
Yeah, but it depended on some of the precincts were misbalanced in the sense that Brickell had a huge problem there. They were voting hours past the 7 o'clock deadline. Out in West Dade, you had the Hammocks, Kendall Regional Library in the Hammocks. That was a huge line. I started going out there on Monday and Tuesday of the early voting cycle, and I couldn't believe the length of the lines. And that's where, for example, Joe Garcia and David Rivera were fighting it out. And I was sitting there watching them work each side of the line.
We're speaking with Dan Ricker. He's the publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report. We're talking about Florida politics and local politics. If you'd like to join in the conversation, the number to call is 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN, or we can also take your emails at radio@WLRN.org. That's radio@WLRN.org. Dan, what about the revelations by the Florida Republicans and former Governor Crist that voter ID regulations were aimed to restrict minorities and Democrats from voting?
Well, you know, on the Republican side, they're saying, no, we were just, that wasn't the intent. No one's going to admit. But you, when you factor in a 10 to 12 page ballot here in Dade County, for example, when you factor in the reduced early voting period, you factor in the fact that these ballots in here in Miami-Dade are in three languages, Creole, English, and Spanish, it gives you a fair amount of, and also the changing of some of the people's, you know, addresses and whether they're valid voters.
Right.
It was an inhibitor. Now, that said, I think you can fairly well say that as far as redistricting both the House and the Senate of the state of Florida, those leaders did a pretty good job because there were a couple upsets. Yet, you know, the incumbents, be it Democrat or GOP, retained. It could have been a lot worse. I mean, it wasn't as gerrymandered as, you know, and they followed the two state new state amendments.
What could be done to overturn this business where the legislature can put amendments onto the ballot, constitutional amendments, as wordy as they like, while citizens' initiatives are limited to 70 words and have to be reviewed by the Supreme Court? Right. Shouldn't the legislature have to go through the same process?
Well, the Supreme Court also rules on the state legislators' stuff that they put on.
Okay, but not in word length.
Well, no, not in word length. But, I mean, that was one of the things that ticked off some Republicans to try to go after the three Supreme Court judges that were looking for retention. And they all received retention, which is kind of, I think, good because it kept the judiciary independent. No, the issue with the length of the ballot question, I think should be restricted to at least 100 words. The legislators, I'm sure, are saying, well, you know, we're dealing with more complex issues or whatever. But I had attorneys review the 11 on this cycle's ballot, and even they didn't know what it was. You know, I mean, they write them in such a way that even if you're voting yes, it actually could be no,
and exactly.
If you're voting no, it actually could be a yes.
So it made voters have to hem and haw at the polls.
To the average voter who may or may not even reviewed the ballot beforehand, they don't have a chance.
But even those who reviewed it beforehand, it was written in such arcane language.
Oh, right. I agree with you.
That you had to get them translated. There were several groups that actually translated in what it means and what it means if you vote yes and what it means if you vote no.
But that's assuming the voter wants to be educated.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but I mean, a significant percentage of the people can barely name even one elected leader outside the president or something like that in their local areas.
Dan, let's turn to Broward County, a new composition of the county commission and mayor. Break that down for us.
Well, the new mayor is Christine Jacobs, and she was mayor of Broward once before, I think in 05.
A long time.
Yeah, well, but she's always been a strong environmentalist. She can be slightly sarcastic and witty, but I've never had a beef with her. And I was up there 2 weeks ago just to make sure to see John Rodstrom and Eileen Lieberman leave the dais after their many years there. And not so much with John, I've had a little trouble, but with Commissioner Lieberman, I've had some issues, partially because she worked as a lobbyist in her private time, and it's tough. You know, she said, "Oh, you have a problem with lobbyists." I said, "No, I have a problem with lobbyists that are also elected leaders." And then 1 minute, or you know, you're over at some entity at the time she was mayor of Broward, and then in another time, you know, as a lobbyist.
What's the status of the Broward County Ethics Commission?
Well, they don't have an ethics commission in the conventional sense. What they do have is an inspector general.
He's an IG.
Yeah, and that's John Scott. And I did a little story on that because he's done all the 31 municipalities in Broward a great favor. You can go on his webpage and just Google Broward County Inspector General, and you'll find it. But he lists all the financial disclosure forms for all the municipalities and the county commissioners. And that's so handy. And there's been the singular thing I've gotten from my readers and people up there was asking me to come up and look at Hollandale Beach and look at, you know, all these little municipalities, Sunrise. And here's a way for an average citizen, go online and quickly get a general idea of what these people are doing or not doing, in the sense that a lot of times, you know, people say, why do you always look at someone's financial disclosure? And I said, you need to start somewhere. It's notarized, which is a very handy thing, because that gives it special status.
Right.
And, from there, and then try to fill in the blanks, you know, from what you're hearing or what you're finding out.
We're speaking with regular contributor Dan Ricker. He is the publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report on today's topical currents. Again, our number, should you want to join in the conversation, anything about South Florida politics or Florida politics, number is 1-800-743-9576. We need to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. And we'll be back to the show in just a moment.
When your loved one has a terminal illness, your entire world changes. And every step of the way, Hospice of Palm Beach County and Hospice of Broward County are there. Not all hospices are the same. As nonprofits, Hospice of Palm Beach County and Hospice of Broward County are committed to providing medical, emotional, and spiritual care that's based on patients' needs and comfort, allowing them to stay in their own home and continue seeing their own doctor. Information is available at 866-704-2574.
This week at O Cinema Wynwood, Bill W. is back for a return engagement and 28 hotel rooms, an intimate portrait of an affair following two people wrestling with the intoxication of love, pain, guilt, and the confusion of loving more than one person. Details at o-cinema.org.
Like Topical Currents' Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying at facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we do return. It's today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman, and we're visiting with longtime regular contributor Dan Ricker, publisher of the Watchdog Report. It's hard to believe, Dan, 14 years that you've been doing the Watchdog Report. How about those listeners who'd like to get a sample of the email?
Just go to watchdogreport.net, www.watchdogreport.net, or just Google it.
And, of course, it's free.
It's free, and there's no ads, and if you Google it, it pops right up. Thank you, University of Miami, for building the webpage with the funding from the Knight Foundation. But, I mean, it's been great.
And it comes in every Sunday evening and every Monday morning. I'm ready to get an update. Dan, I remember, November of 2000, we had some, we were covering the election. We had some weird calls from Palm Beach County. And then all of a sudden.
Butterfly ballot.
And the hanging chads and off we went. And the election wasn't decided until mid-December.
I remember you saying at the time, stop the calls. We're in a radio studio. We have no idea what it, you know, someone's trying to find out what the heck is a butterfly ballot and everything else. And then when Florida went for Gore, I said it was too early. That was one of my favorite aspects. And everyone was kidding me here. And then all of a sudden it came back too close to the call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We have an email. Corinne. Let me get this. I'm listening to your conversation regarding the voting fiasco in Miami-Dade. I wanted to mention that I voted in Miami Beach in a public school precinct. No line at all. I believe this is because voting took place in a large auditorium. Each voter took a seat in the room and filled out their ballot. And once completed, they went to the machines to scan their ballot. It was an excellent system because it allowed many people to fill out their ballots at the same time, thus reducing the amount of time at the machines. My suggestion for the next election is to have more precincts in schools with large auditoriums.
I had the same situation in Miami Lakes because we were in the auditorium of the elementary school there, and you could sit down in the chair and do your thing and then go back and process your vote.
This is one of the problems with the early voting polls or precincts that they opened, the 20 that we had here in Dade County. Some of them were limited by their physical space. They have to be secure because you're having the machines there for 7 days. You know, there are certain limitations. City of Miami, where they did it in the back conference room, they had added a new office, so there was 20 voting machines and like 5 scanners. So, I mean, it varied from place to place, and having more room like this, the lady just mentioned,
right,
is obviously going to make it faster.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, that's easy enough, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email may be quicker, that's radio@WLRN.org. Caller from Fort Lauderdale, this is Alan. Hello, Alan.
Good afternoon. I had some questions about your comments on the redistricting process. I'm wondering if there was any real analysis done on are the districts actually any more fair? Because if you look at the state map, it looks like there's still a lot of gerrymandering and bizarre districts going on. And if you look at the results of the election, you know, if over 50% of the voters were Democrat and voted for President Obama and Senator Nelson, why do we have a one-third split in favor of Republicans in the Florida Senate and House?
Yeah, but there's always been that. I mean, you've got actually more registered Democrats. And part of it is once you are an incumbent, obviously you can run a more effective campaign, be you an R or a D. But I think, you know, I haven't heard the outpouring like we had, I suppose, back in 2002 where it was challenged in courts. And it was a little more fair, and you had actually a couple of, Republicans not win who were expected to win, not win, and I'm trying to think if there have been any D's that had that same issue. It wasn't as bad as it could have been. I think that's a better way of saying it.
Well, it still looks, that they're cramming all the African Americans into some areas. They're cramming all of the wealthy people into certain areas. You know, you just, if you look at the map, it's all over the place, and that again, the consultation process wasn't all that fair and transparent. They consulted everybody, but the end result was, it was decided by Republicans. I think we really need to have an independent body, not a Republican party and not a Democratic party, responsible for deciding the voters, just like they were saying all along. We need
The courts have ruled redistricting is totally political. That's the one I've learned over the years.
It doesn't have to be. There's many places in the world that are democracies that don't have it that way.
Well, we're here.
Dan, I have an emailer here who wants to know, look ahead to, thank you very much for your call, Alan, wants to look ahead to 2014 and who could challenge Rick Scott for the governorship. Both Republican and Democrat.
I mean, you've got Charlie Crist now rattling around. He probably polls better than most people.
Certainly has the recognition.
Yeah. You've got Alex Sink still bouncing around in the polls and, now has perhaps more name recognition than she did in 2010 when she lost in a tight race to Scott. But I think there will be someone else out there. The Democrats, though, have a history, especially in these state races or whatever, of not being able to mobilize their troops, their voters, as effectively as the Republicans. Now, when it comes to the national election, the Obama team, for example, had a huge grassroots campaign. They started their campaign right after 08. They kept together all their supporters. They did you know, a huge amount of outreach. They were constantly communicating. And so you got this wave, this push from the Democratic voters this time. Will we see that again in 2014? I don't know. Historically,
it's been less. So why are the Democrats seeming to be slacking off on the midterm?
Well, I think part of it is their party leadership is more diffuse. I mean, I joke the GOP sometimes are like the Romans. They come together, you know, they stay, you know, they back their candidate, and they're better at the ground game on these smaller races. And you can see that, frankly, in the last call when we were talking about the state races, you know, that why the Republicans in the state House or Senate won, they were probably better organized.
Dan, one thing I wanted to ask about, one of the things that was approved was that term limits for the commissioners. How is that going in Miami-Dade County?
Right.
How is that going to affect?
It's 8 years, or it's two terms, two 4-year terms times two, and it's not retroactive. It starts 2012 on. So every commissioner on the dais right now will have at least two more terms if they can hold on.
Oh, so that won't happen until they're finished with their terms.
Right, 2020.
If they get elected again.
2020.
Okay.
And, of course, the reason it passed probably because there was no pay raise involved for
right.
the commissioners
right.
either.
And, you know, I mean, it's the voters, all you do is throw out term limits, and obviously at the state level they said yes, and now here locally they said yes. So.
Is that always a wise thing to do, is to have term limits?
Well, you know, Katie Sorensen, a county commissioner, longtime county commissioner, used to argue that, you know, they face term limits every 4 years by the voters.
And it takes a while to really hit your stride.
It takes a while to hit your stride, to finish some projects you've been pushing on, et cetera, et cetera. That said, you also have, in many cases, a huge numerical advantage as far as fundraising. I mean, you know, commissioners raising $200,000-$400,000 to some challengers $40,000, and it's really tough.
But in Miami-Dade Commission, there has been some recent incumbents fail.
Doran Roll was the last one,
right?
You know, and that was, I mean, you know, he had multiple ethical darts and different things in him. It surprised me. I'd written extensively over the years about his issues. And Jessica, and the oldest social service agency down there. But I mean, at one point they had $370,000 in bounced check charges. And he was the CEO. I mean, there's a lot going on there. Anyway.
We have an emailer, Andrew in Hallandale, wants to know if Nan Rich is running as a Democrat for governor.
She said she is, you know. I don't know if she has a name recognition. Same with someone like Dan Gelber. I mean, he tried to be the attorney general and was knocked off by Pam Bondi. It's a tough state. There's three states here. There's, you know, Central and North Florida and South Florida. And as far as I can tell, Central and North Florida look at us like some kind of anomaly of nature. And, you know, if they could somehow, like, chainsaw us off, they'll take the money, though. They want our money. I mean, you know, Miami-Dade is the biggest donor state to the state. So.
Well, especially with the paramutuals and all the gambling.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is, I feel like when I used to live in Asia, it used to be called in the 1800s slicing the melon when they were referring to China. Down here, it's like, you know, slicing the pineapple or something. I mean, the mango, because we're cash rich,
right?
But we certainly don't get the disproportionate amount of money that we send up.
Again, we're open phones with Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker. If you'd like to join in the discussion, you're certainly welcome. The number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, Bonnie will take your emails. That's radio@WLRN.org. First up before our break, or next up, it's Sandra in Doral. Hello, Sandra.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because yesterday we had a runoff mayor election and plus two council seats here in Doral. And sadly, only 26% of the registered voters showed up. And that shows you that either people don't care or just people gave up after the long lines that we did on November 6th general elections.
Maybe they're just kind of worn out.
I think they were, sadly, very sad, because we had two mayors. One of them allegedly doesn't speak English very well and spent over $500,000 in this election. So that worries me in a city that is not... it's a brand new city, if you look at it.
That's amazing. He spent $500,000 for a municipal mayor's race of a fairly, don't take this wrong, but it's a smaller, you know, if this was a city of Miami or Miami Beach, but, you know, I'm trying to think that the population of Doral is maybe 28,000, I think, 26,000.
I think it went up to around 50,000.
Oh, it's up to
50?
All right.
Yes,
I'll look at that when I get home.
Yeah, look at it because I'm not sure. You know, these are things that sometimes we look at in the newspapers, and I haven't been at the city of Doral to find out how many, but the amount of housing that is being built, yes, it definitely goes out into that number. But only 70,000 something are registered voters here.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 17,000, only 26% showed up yesterday.
Right.
So that's how it's. I thought that was my comment here.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. We're speaking with Dan Ricker, the publisher of the Independent Watchdog Report, on today's Topical Currents. We have some calls, and we'll get to them and discuss more about Florida politics after a short break on today's Topical Currents. Stay with us.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. We're also streaming online at WLRN.org. South Florida Theater League and 91.3 WLRN offer same-day, half-price tickets at leading regional theaters and cultural organizations, including Otra Theater Company, Broward and Miami Beach Stage Door Theater, Parker Playhouse, and Gable Stage. Information and a complete list of shows online at culturalconnection.org. Culturalconnection.org, your ticket to the cultural arts. SHINE is a program that helps seniors understand their Medicare and health insurance. With large numbers of baby boomers joining the Medicare ranks daily, SHINE needs volunteers. Learn more about becoming a SHINE volunteer at floridashine.org or call 1-800-96-ELDER. Merrick Festival kicks off the holiday season early in Coral Gables with the Holtz Children's Hospital 2012 Caroling Competition, a Coral Gables tradition for 26 years. Programs run nightly now through December 2nd. Information at 305-491-4180.
The Key West Film Festival is November 29th to December 2nd. It features over 30 films from directors like Dustin Hoffman and with actors ranging from Olivia Wilde to Clive Owen, all screened at Key West's San Carlos Theater and Tropic Cinema. Social highlights include an opening night celebration at the Hemingway Home, an exclusive Matt Kearney concert, appearances by Alan Cumming and Kat Coiro, and a screen on the beach. Details at KeyWestFilmFestival.com, brought to you by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
And 34 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. We resume our conversation with Dan Ricker, publisher of the Watchdog Report. We have lines open, that number 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576, and email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Dan Ricker, let's turn to the city of Miami. What's going on there?
Well,
seems unusually quiet.
No, yeah, just before the storm. Yesterday, the Miami-Dade County Ethics Commission had a couple of rulings, one of which is Vice Chair Commissioner Mark Sarnoff had taken a trip to Brazil for the Volvo Ocean Race, and his wife went along, and he hadn't disclosed it, and the county or city attorney, Julia Brew, had said, oh, that's a perfunctory official act. You don't have to disclose it. Well, they came back and said, that's not the correct ruling. It does have to be enclosed. He is allowed to take the trip. All they have to do is disclose that, you know, the cost of that trip. And then we also find out that in the case of his wife, Teresa, she was sponsored and Volvo picked up the tab for her. And so that wasn't known. And it gets further because that was back in the spring. But since then, Commissioner Sarnoff has gone to China with the Miami Heat, you know, with all the players. And so I have written one story about that saying he had to disclose that. And I think now he finally will have to. And because that would have been it's going to make this trip to Brazil look like nothing. Going to China with the Miami Heat basketball team, the Chinese would have pulled out all stops. I mean, you would have been at the fanciest hotels, everything.
In your last edition of the Watchdog Report, you wrote a little bit about former Miami Mayor Manny Diaz and his
Miami Transformed
biography.
Right.
You weren't too impressed as a literary critic.
Well, look, his wife one day said to me that she thought it was getting personal between the mayor and myself, and I said it's not personal. He's been a disappointment. I don't get mad at anyone. I was actually a big supporter of his early on. I used to say, you know, he puts a sentence together, the bond ratings are going up, and he doesn't scare small children, versus some of our past mayors who were slightly bombastic.
Didn't he succeed Joe Carollo?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you look at the history, the guy seemed like a pretty safe bet. But he also seems to have had somewhere along the line an ethical bypass, because, you know, he did the seven people, he kind of was working behind the scenes to have seven people get $7 million, the lucky seven, for the Miami fire fee debacle that was later thrown out in court. He didn't say anything when Miami Police Chief John Timoney had a free Lexus SUV for 18 months and kind of defended that. But the kicker was the house deal where the then city manager, Joe Areola, put up the $425,000, and Areola, Johnny Winton, the city commissioner, and the mayor, Manny Diaz, bought a house together, with the manager being the inferior as far as, you know, political rank in the deal. And Manny, or the mayor, fought it to the point that by the time it hits the Ethics Commission back in 07, I think it was, his attorney, Richard Leidecker, was arguing to the Miami-Dade Ethics Commissioners that Manny had given up the best years of his life and the children, you know, he deprived his children of a father and all this. It really went on and on, and you could practically hear the violins in the background. And it wasn't until Ethics Commissioner Seymour Gelber said, "This is outrageous." And then they wrote him a 3-4-page letter of reprimand that was just blistering. And it's that kind of stuff. If he had said, you know what, I'd made a mistake. But he absolutely would not admit to anything. And that's what's, I think, annoying, not just with him, but with many elected leaders. Everyone's supposed to just take it like the word of God. And, you know, when someone challenges someone, you know, it's like, oh, you know, is that $10,000 in your hand? No, I'm just making change.
So where does Amazon rank his biography?
I don't know. I didn't look.
It had one very, very good review. I saw that.
Yeah, well, if you don't look at it, if you're not from here, it reads like, my God, you know, his title,
Transform Miami.
And everything from the day he was born, you know, he had faced adversity. He'd been a Cuban-American going through the thing. He went to Belen Academy, like Exeter. He paid off his student loans on time. It's a real success story. I have no problem with that. It's my problem is as he comes into this and he starts to get, especially in 04 and 05 when we had all the hurricanes, he and Winton and Areola became known as the Three Amigos. And they're, you know, I mean, they, while they were okay at the dais, what they were doing out in the field was getting, you know, it's getting pretty interesting. And you know, at least
how so?
What specifically?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're all at the Orange Bowl command tent, and everyone's, you know, I remember Ariel going, "Well, I should have been a firefighter," even though he's a little overweight, and there's no way he's going to be a firefighter. You know, and everyone was, you know, there was some drinking, you know, and which later got Johnny into trouble, you know,
the airport
at the airport, and got him ejected from or suspended from office, you know, but it was just, they thought they had a free pass. And I think that's what if he had toned down, I think he made a lot of accomplishments. You know, people say, oh, he should have had more parks. Thank God the condos are starting to fill up, because there was a real issue about that. Thank God South America economy is doing so well, because that's where that money's coming from. But it was just that he could do no wrong. And of course, there was, where did he get the over $400,000 in cash on hand one year? And this is something that I keep going back to, back in either 97 or 98, because I check all these financial disclosures. And for a year, every week, I ran that story I was asking him to explain it. And
he never answered?
Never answered. And I'll tell you, that caught the Obama administration's eye. I mean, they hadn't been sworn in yet, but I was getting calls, you know, because they were looking at him to come up to D.C.
Let's take another listener call. This is Henry, or is it Henri, Miami Beach?
It's Henry. Henry. Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about the voting process again. I know that were speaking about it earlier, and I was a volunteer for Organizing for America during this last election, and I was actually in the boiler room for, you know, those, I guess, 14 hours on election day, just taking calls from the precincts, you know, all over the county, with people calling in and saying, well, there's, you know, a pregnant woman here and there's no place for her to sit down. There's somebody else with a child. There's no water. It's hot. The rooms are sweltering and small. And I was wondering if anybody has talked about using our wonderful post offices as permanent polling places so that we can have more and better polling places in the county.
First of all, Election Day is a work day for the post office. Second,
but it could be changed.
No, I appreciate that, but I really
don't know whether federal property can be used.
Yeah, I don't see. I think there. I agree with you. We need other locations. I just don't think it's going to be the United States Postal Service.
Yeah, I guess I was just.
Better shot would be the schools.
The school yeah, that emailer had a great point.
Yeah. But I was, you know, I don't want the post offices to be lost. You know, they're talking about closing down many, and maybe this is an extra added value.
What they'll do is close them down and then sell the property.
Right.
Because, I mean, post offices have some prime real estate.
Yes, they do. They do. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks for calling.
And we'll move along to Aaron. Aaron in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to go back, if I may. You were talking a little while ago about potential candidates to run against Rick Scott when he comes up for re-election. And as far as the Democrats are concerned, you know, I take your point that North and South Florida are very politically different, and that north of Lake Okeechobee, they do sort of view South Florida as a different country, so to speak. But I was wondering if there's been any talk about possibly Sandy Dallenberg. You know, he's a person with recognition.
You're talking
in South
about
Florida.
The attorney.
Yes, the attorney, former state prosecutor,
right.
Former president of Florida State University.
He's a legend. Yeah. He's a legend in Florida in the Florida legislature.
Is he interested?
But
I don't know.
I think he's very elderly, though.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know his age. I mean, the thing is, you know, there's a lot of people that could give. Governor Scott a run for their money. The question is, are they interested in putting themselves through a statewide race?
I guess that is the 64,000.
Yeah, it's the operative question.
He was in the Florida legislature when I was covering it in 1976.
Right.
So,
right.
All right. Well, thank you much.
Okay,
thanks for your call.
Thanks for your call.
It's Topical Currents. We're speaking with independent Watchdog Report publisher Dan Ricker about politics in South Florida and throughout the state. And we need to take another short break, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, the Florida National University, Chapman Partnership, and Manchester Business School. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support.
You've reached a certain age. You're viewed as a success. Still, you are not immune. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. West Palm Beach's Hanley Center is considered a center of excellence for comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery for older adults and baby boomers. Hanley Center, for older adult and boomer recovery. Details at 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life. 855-718-2233. The Miami Children's Chorus shares the magic of the holidays in Voices of Angels. This exuberant holiday concert features recognizable holiday favorites like Hark the Herald Angels Sing, in addition to multicultural holiday choral pieces. You can hear the 150-plus voices of the MCC on Sunday, December 16, 4 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church of Coral Gables. Details at miamichildrenschorus.org or 305-662-7494.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're visiting with Dan Ricker, longtime regular contributor and publisher of the Watchdog Report, which, of course, is available weekly by email and also by website.
Right. Watchdogreport.net. You can also send me an email from that site if you want to get it. It just says contact me, and I'll load you in so that you get it first on Sunday night, because it goes up about noon or so on Monday.
And we have caller Juan in Hollywood.
Hi, question for Dan.
Yes, sir.
How do you, given that we all have political preferences, inclinations, etc., how do you manage to maintain your objectivity and maintain the level of neutrality?
I think
my answer off the air.
Okay, I think if I'm actually think someone might be a better candidate, I actually probably am harder on them. That's what I've found that. I try to go with the process. I generally don't vote until Election Day, and it kind of allows me to just cover it. I'm much better as a news service, I think, than as a columnist with some axe to grind. Unless you physically hurt me, I mean, there's a couple things that set me off. But when I've gotten to the point now after 14 years or so that when I'm covering these people, I just let what they, you know, you can't make it up. They say it. I have a big tape machine. I got it, and I report it.
He wanted to know how you maintain your independence also.
How are you funded?
Financially.
I live off the community. It's not been easy. The flaw was, I work alone, and the other flaw was I made it for free. But I've been blessed.
Well, for a year or so, you were driving a car without any air conditioning.
No, I still have it. It's 3 years now with no air. So, yeah. No, back then I had a old BMW that was a death trap.
So it's not exactly corporate.
No, this is bare bones. And actually, I'm one of the few people that actually return checks. I've actually, in the 14 years, I've returned maybe 45 people's checks, one of which was like $750, which is a lot of money for me.
Why have you returned them?
I just didn't want to be associated with the people, or just didn't feel right, or they were frankly a target of interest.
I suppose there has to be transparency in your operation as
right.
well.
Right, and that's, I list, the bulk of the people, and I'm just very, I don't get that, United Way is like $1,000. I mean, I'm not asking for huge amounts, but I try to slowly pull together. Sometimes some months are better than others, but, I've gotten this far, so there's
something. How can you stand to go to those boring county commission committee meetings?
Well, I work the crowd. I mean, I first of all, I tape all these meetings.
Plus the public health trust, which you're an expert
right,
on.
Right, but I mean, I go to all these meetings. I can also tape them. They're on TV. So what I try to do when I go to these things is talk to people in the audience, people I know, to get their perspective. There's all kinds of other stuff and sidebar stuff going on. And, I also talk to the mayor of whatever, the municipalities or the county, and all the other elected leaders. And they all get the watchdog, so. It's after 14 years, no one really gives me a problem.
Dan, can we move to Miami Beach?
Sure.
So the former lead code compliance officer for the city of Miami Beach was sentenced to 51 months in prison. What did he do?
Well, it was shaking down club owners, for noise and code and different things. I mean, this is part of a whole, the beach has a much more systemic problem. You've got a very strange culture over there where people almost don't even know what the issue is, when they're doing this kind of stuff. And they lost their manager. He retired after 11 years. But the next person they hire has really got to come in and everyone talks about changing the culture. Well, this is a really inbred culture. And they've got to get an injection of transparency and non-corruption in there, because it permeates the whole infrastructure, you know, and philosophy of the city, unfortunately. I wish it was otherwise.
So why has it been able to remain so untransparent?
Well, everyone covers each other. You know, there's only so many FBI agents, and, you know, part of it is you need people to realize that when they go along with someone trying to do something unethical or something illegal, that if they go along with it, they're condoning it. And that's a big deal. You know, I hear this all the time. Well, everyone's doing it. You know, why do you write so much about fraud in South Florida? Look at all the fraud in Afghanistan and Iraq. I've heard that, I mean, more times than I can imagine. And I say, well, I can't control what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, but I can control what's going on in parts of South Florida.
You have an emailer?
Have an emailer. It's Siobhan in Hollywood. And she's looking at Democrats statewide. She says, as previously mentioned, Nan Rich, Katie Sorensen should always be on a short list. Whatever her detractors may say, Lori Parrish is a formidable candidate, well-known in Broward, well-liked by the big boys in politics, boundless energy, great customer service from her agency. Pam Iorio from Tampa.
Tampa, I know.
As well as Representative Castor from Tampa.
Yeah, familiar? Betty.
Benny. And she said, by the way, just letting us know that it's Kristin Jacobs,
right,
and not Christine,
you. Right.
Jacobs.
Betty Castor,
thank you,
has run for governor before, I think.
No, she ran for Senate. Wasn't her? I'm trying to think. You may be right.
It goes way back, though.
It may have been the 98 race when she was.
Let's take a quick call. This is it Remy in Pariah?
Yes. No, good afternoon. No, mine was that there's rumblings again about putting a roof on used to be Joe Robbie Stadium in the Miami State County Commission. And I would love to hear some information on that, because considering of all the venues.
This is for the upgrade of Dolphin Stadium?
Right.
Right.
Okay. We have a really bad connection, and we're getting short on time.
I think, you know, I mean, after the fiasco of the Miami Marlins Stadium, I can appreciate the people of the Dolphins and Joe Robbie wanting to do something, but I think it's going to be a much tougher road in the future for any kind of public,
especially
funding.
After the Marlins burned.
No, that's what I'm saying. After this whole, you know, it's more than a
fire
fiasco.
Sale.
You know, it's just and the elected leaders that couldn't have made a better deal should, you know, and that's part of it. I mean, the anger is not only do we not have naming rights, not do we, you know, the team got everything, but all the payments are in the back 15 years of the bonds that finance out to about $2.5 billion and was never discussed during the commission meetings, the actual aggregate financed out. Everyone, George Burgess would say, oh, it's like buying a house.
In the parking garage.
Yeah, well, a $90,000 million parking garage cost $173. I mean, it was, we really got used.
Dan, I want to ask you about the Coconut Grove Playhouse.
Right.
It's like a ping pong ball. So
right.
Who has it now?
Now, it reverted back to the state after some legislation was created that if certain things hadn't occurred, it would revert back because the state had given it to the Miami-Dade County. Now it's with the state. They're trying to figure out what to do with it. They have a sequence of events they have to offer to the local public universities. Then they offer it back to the county, if you can believe it. And then they can offer it to, like, the municipality, like the city of Miami. The big issue is there's $20 million of public money, but it's under county control. There's 15 from the O2 GOB bond, or strike that, 04 GOB bond, and there's another $5 million convention development sales tax. So the county's the only one with any money. You've got multiple creditors. You've got Miami code enforcement about the red flag it, which means it's condemn it, but it's still sitting there empty since 06, and it's, I don't see an easy resolution. Frankly, I think the county will get it back, and as the Mayor Jimenez says, they just want it back, but any development money they want to plow into it.
But they'd restore it.
Yeah, well, as much as they can, because it's totally deteriorated. Mm.
Dan Ricker, once again, how can people learn more about you and the Watchdog Report?
WatchdogReport.net. Just Google WatchdogReport.net, and there's
the box
right up. Away we go.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a very interesting hour.
Bonnie.
Thank you, Dan.
Joe, always a pleasure.
And thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our callers, our emailers. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Find author and book links at the WLRN Facebook page, as well as staff photos. Drop us a like, por favor. We also have free audio archives and downloads of the program at our website. That's WLRN.org. And tomorrow we check out the efficacy of common drugs found in most of our medicine cabinets. You might be surprised. And more, Linda Gastenheimer looks at foods of the future. What will Americans be eating, say, in 2035? Now the calendar. On this day in 1921, 91 years ago, the first parcel of land is sold in the new South Florida development called Coral Gables, soon to be fabled for its beauty, Mediterranean architecture, shopping, and parking hassles. Also on this day in 1943, 69 years ago, the birth of prolific singer and composer Randy Newman in Los Angeles. He was an early member of the group The Tikis, which later became Harper's Bazaar. Here's an earworm for you. Remember, feeling groovy. One more while we remember the 1968 Democratic Convention. On this day in 1994, 18 years ago, the death of U.S. anti-war activist Jerry Rubin at age 56, hit by a car while jaywalking. Rubin co-founded the Yippies with Abbie Hoffman. And we leave with a thought from Randy Newman, who also wrote the score for the Seabiscuit film. Quote from Randy Newman, "If I were to die tomorrow, I think they'd say Newman, composer of the hit song Short People, jumped off a mountain today." This is Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.